Once again, it's that time again, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Kay Thompson Live Show. My name is Eric Payne. I am the co-host, and it is Wednesday, the 10th of August. Another news day. Breaking news as we speak, as a matter of fact. One of Donald Trump's supporters wanted to climb up the side of his building to talk to him. Wow, that's really special, isn't it? That's really something that's very special, that one of his supporters wanted to climb up on the side of the building and talk to him. And the guy left a rambling message on YouTube and stuff like that. So, and here's my mom, everybody. Kay Thompson Live. Here you go.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kay Thompson. And we're going to be talking about Donald Trump. We're going to be talking about the different police departments around the country. I saw a news report dealing with the different police departments and what they are doing racially. And it is quite a record that they have, starting with the Baltimore Police Department. You know what, that with the Freddie Gray case. And you know about the young man who was, you know, what, slammed into the police car. He died at the hands of the police. And now they're actually looking at coming down on various police departments around the country. So these are the scathing reports about the Baltimore Police Department. And they're finally looking into the different the treatment of black males, especially, you know, around the country in the various police departments. They use unconstitutional strip searches, arrests. They're gathering evidence for harassment. You know, and Donald Trump is not helping, you know, not helping it any. Trust breaks, you know, the police department, he has just broken bread with the police department, okay? And he's making things very, very difficult. So a lot of police departments, police are being fired and on leave. Let's see, there was a sergeant who was instructed to stop harassment of black males at several different places. There are black males on street corners. They're being arrested for no reason. And cops are, you know, they're in control at this particular point. Some cities have been instructed to make something up. And I heard this on the news today on the computer and on the news. And a lot of them have been found, the police departments in this country have been found guilty of racial bias. So, and the orders of, you know, different police departments, you know, they're just monitored for years to come. And, you know, I also think that, you know, Donald Trump, you know, has a lot to do with this because he's encouraging, you know, kind of negative action from one group to the other. So that's the kind of thing that we're going to be dealing with. By the way, there's a new chief of police in Missouri, you know, the Michael Brown case where he was shot by that police person who got off, and that was in the city of Ferguson, that one. So lots of stuff going on, and, you know, something has got to be done. It seems that the relationship between the police, you know, is getting to be an anti-black, white, and blue. It used to be. So I don't know what's going on, but we're going to be looking at it. Talking about Donald Trump, you know, he is one miserable person. He has a negative view on everything without having any plan for anything or anything else going on with him. Waiting for him to call. He's going to be calling in. We had a good show last week. We talked to a lady who was the jazz singer, and, you know, her name was I forget her name right now. I don't have those text notes in front of me, but that was a fantastic interview. And if you missed it, you need to go to Kay Thompson Live last week. I forget the date, but you can look it up on the internet and go and hear that show. It was really, really, very good, you know. So what else is going on in the world? I'm a little bit annoyed with, you know, listening to various complaints of people around the different countries. Talked to, you know, just came back from Bermuda, you know, and had an excellent time. Some of you may have seen, you know, on my computer, you know, seeing, you know, the different places that we were there, and what was going on in Bermuda. Bermuda is a beautiful island, as is St. John. Sometimes you just need a vacation and get away from all the nonsense going around. So, and they have a good... Is Wayne on? Wayne Gilman, are you there?
Yes, Wayne? I am, Kay. Good evening. How are you?
I'm in a lousy mood right now because of the action of the different police departments around the country. You know, and because of the police department, you know, they and who is driving this? Who's driving this kind of, negative behavior is Trump. You know, I think and it's just annoying. I am so angry right now. So are you?
I wouldn't get highly upset. I'm trying to be patient in his ability to self-destruct because he seems to be on that path now. I'm not saying that Americans at times have short memories and they tend to forget some of the things that he has said and done. But anyone in their right mind, there are no excuses for this guy anymore. You know, there's something pathologically, in my opinion, wrong. You know, someone may say the same thing about me. But the bottom line is, I'm not running for president, and I have not done anything, to my knowledge, to offend anyone publicly the way he has. And he just lacks the finesse to have that kind of responsibility as someone who's communicated to a certain extent and a businessman. I mean, there's no ethic with him. It's all about him. And I think most people are beginning to see it because he is basically the last year and a half played and preyed on the fears of those Americans that are not doing well. And he has a certain constituency. I don't think that's going to change. But I've had some time to travel a little bit in the last 6 days I was out of town. And I feel the momentum. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to be a landslide victory, but it just seems in the East, people are beginning to get it now. And I really don't see much in terms of outward promotion for Trump as I do for Hillary.
Yeah. His numbers are way down. Hillary is way ahead. But it annoys me because of the fact that the mentality and, you just feel like I'm angry. You know, I'm angry because he is going into this whole negative thing. He is dividing people. He has no plan, and
right.
He's calling for things that, are really just causing some people to be violent. And one thing, it makes you feel really angry. So,
I understand your anger and your pain because, clearly – there is a possibility. I mean, I'm not ruling it out, but, I do concur with you. There's legitimate reasons to feel angry and disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a campaign like this, and I've covered
a
few.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry.
Go ahead.
Some of the other politicians and people around the country are saying that, he needs help. And if he became the president of the United States, he would be the worst president in the history of the world. Okay, the
right.
Worst in the history of this country, the worst person, because he keeps egging people on toward violence. He knows what he's doing. What is he, the devil in disguise? It's really, really, really very depressing.
It is.
And then, you have on top of that, the black community is dealing with so many other problems. Look, incarceration rates. I was looking at, the numbers of people incarcerated around the country, black males. Tons of them,
mm-hmm.
And the stories that you hear is just so depressing. But what I'm experiencing now is out anger, So I can't even hardly talk about it. So no wonder hip hop has been criminalized. No wonder, the rappers, the rappers, the kids, they feel very deeply about a lot of things going on regarding the police. And regarding the police terrorizing young people on the street, Black Lives Matter. Of course, that group. Listen, it was bound to come with Black Lives Matter, because of the fact that all these kids that were killed in the street. that kid that was walking down the highway and the dumb police, you know, shot him on the highway. What is this?
Right. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we could go on and on. We could write a book.
Yeah.
I mean, Trayvon Martin. We could go back into time. I mean, it's unfortunate. You know, the one thing that I have found commendable is the fact that there has been an interest in law enforcement in Dallas, Texas. That black police chief who sent out a clarion call for people who are participating in the protests to become members of the law enforcement community to help solve some of the problems has gotten an overwhelming response, and that might be a good thing. That, you know, I mean,
yeah,
there's a need for that, and I think that's commendable. But, you know, the deal is that you're not going to hear much of that because I guess that's not sexy enough in terms of the conservative press, you know? But,
yeah.
I mean, even today we had an incident here in Manhattan in Trump Towers. I guess you're aware of that with the climber. And
is he
when
still climbing?
Yeah, yeah. And they caught him. They managed to bring him inside the building. And when you scan the coverage from one station to another, you have the regular local news stations because it occurred just as the evening news would come on for the local O&Os, you know, the owned and operated network stations. And then if you were to scan places like CNN, MSNBC, and then Fox, you know, I have to say the level of hysteria and the mocking, I mean, on Fox is to me, it was just so off the wall when you juxtapose that with what was going on at MSNBC and CNN. You know, I mean, there was opinion over the top, unnecessary, almost sophomoric the way they were carrying on in a little time I watched them. And I'm just saying,
were
no wonder. I mean, everybody has an agenda.
They didn't
know what was in the climber's mind. But just the fact that they would go about ridiculing him. At one point I overheard one of the announcers say, instead of climbing, he could have taken an elevator. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
I mean, that was unnecessary. I did hear that distinctly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the idle chatter in the background and stuff like that. I mean, this is what the world, everybody is an authority now, and no one is willing to do the due diligence to have a certain amount of reverence and respect for what it is insofar as reporting the news. Whether this guy favored Trump or not, you know, it was newsworthy because he risked his life going up 28, 30 flights. We still don't know what it was for, but I know one thing, what he did was seen around the world. You know, if CNN had it on, I'm certain it was seen around the world, you know, and it's just one of those things. So, it bothers me that you have this decadence that's going on in our business. And, you know, I know you took time to really sharpen your craft over the years that you worked, whether it was LIB or when you were on New Jersey TV. You know, to me, it just seems like the standards don't count anymore now. And that angers me more than, you know, because I see Trump for what he is. But it's just some idiot mind out there, and forgive me for saying that, but somebody who's just not, worthy of understanding what is going on between the lines is not well-versed or read. Those individuals are easily manipulated by people in the right wing and the non-progressive media outlets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's it. I mean, they form an opinion based on what they hear.
Yes. Listen, this guy was traveling up the wall, you know, in Manhattan. Was he ill? Did they get him down? What's the present status of that?
Well, okay, they eventually got him down. He without injuring himself. And I have to say, for a moment there, you know, the NYPD did a good thing. You know, they risked their lives in doing this also, and it could have gone either way. My thinking is, while I was watching it, I had some work being done on my property here, and the plumbers who were here, they took a moment to see what was going on, and it was just saying, you know, we're always condemning these cops, but God forbid if that guy had fallen in the process of trying to rescue him, you know, then what would have happened, you know? Would there be more protests? I mean, it's a dicey situation. And so I certainly wouldn't want to have that responsibility, but thank God things worked out okay, and they're vetting him out now. From what I just saw on MSNBC, that apparently they haven't found any reason at the moment as to why he did what he did, but other than the fact that he wanted to talk to Donald Trump. Now, whether he wanted to say something, you know, nasty to him or just have something commendable to say, no one really knows. But the fact that one network... I'm sorry, Kate, what'd you say?
He's crawling up a wall or climbing up a wall.
Yeah, well,
Is that the idea?
Yeah, I guess maybe to draw attention to what's going on to a certain extent, because usually when people do things like that is to draw attention to something. But, you know, at one point there was a speculation that he might have been a terrorist. And, you know, the same way Trump in idle chatter even Paul Ryan out of the Speaker of the House from the Republican Party, the leader of the Republican Party in the House, turned around and said that what Trump said about Hillary Clinton yesterday was unforgivable. You don't want to threaten somebody's life because you don't agree with what it is that they do. You know, it's that kind of, you know, talk. And then every time he says something, an hour later he's got to offer either an explanation of what he said. Almost like you need to have, like, Trump is a language, and you need a book, excuse me, to understand what it is that he's saying. It's like you have to sit a course to understand what Trump means, you know? So, I understand what you're saying. It's crazy.
The atmosphere around what he says and what his people were for him, you know, it is so irrational, you know, and it's so dangerous. And he doesn't even seem to realize it. I think he realizes because he's a danger. He is a dangerous person. They are saying, and they said over and over again, that if he should even become president, he would be the worst president in the entire world. He would cause more havoc and more deaths than anything. So, and he has to know this, or he should be hospitalized.
Right.
Okay, because I think he is out of his mind. He has to be. He's talking to millions and millions of people. You can't tell me that this guy, you know, isn't playing games, you know? He can't be rational. You know, it's just impossible. And it's worrisome. It really is. And it's annoying. You know, and what
it is.
Our community, I feel
we'd
be more stronger about it.
I clearly understand your anger, Kay, and even last week I had a chance to go with some friends of mine, drive around Virginia and Washington D.C., Maryland, those areas, and every once in a while, particularly in Virginia, which is like I guess is the gateway to the South, you would run across a neighborhood and some rednecks where they would have the Confederate flag up. And, you know, you feel, if you were a person of color, you get tense. But there's so few of those people, I think, and in a minority, and they fit a certain standard, a certain class. You know, I mean, they're not well-educated. I don't know what kind of laborers they are, to be honest with you. But, I mean, I certainly would not be putting up a Confederate flag below the United States flag in front of my door, because to me it's just you're advertising, you know. You know, I know, you know, in some of these states outside of New York and New Jersey, it's pretty easy to get access to arms, and you know, I just try to be respectful. But I mean, everybody's entitled to their opinion, and I have a right to disagree like anyone else. But, you know, until you see it in front of you, it can be somewhat sobering. But I still maintain they're a minority, you know. They are a minority. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in a couple of months.
Yeah. You know, Wayne, let's talk a minute about black radio. Has it disappeared?
Okay.
And I'm talking about black talk radio. Now, you know, when we were on WLIB, we were covering a whole lot of different cases, okay?
Right.
And we were trying to do some good about bringing the attention to what was going on in the African-American community, the Latino community, and, you know, just bringing attention to different things that were going on, and we were talking about it. We were discussing it. We were, you know, having, you know, sit down about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, we were able to air grievances, and we haven't had an outlet. Now, where are our outlets? Is LIB still talk, or is not talk? What about BLS?
Well,
what about... You know, RL, New Jersey Network.
You know, I all I could say to those so-called institutions is that white folks who now own them, and I say this because I have no desire whether I go back there or not, you know, at this point, I have a right to an opinion, and I really feel it's one thing to be regarded as a heritage station, but it's another thing to work in the tradition of what it is that was built. And I think the problem with us as a people, and this is my myopic opinion, is that, you know, if we strike lightning and find gold, somehow we don't prepare our progeny or people who come behind us to either share in the vision, you know. And it's not about the being. I know money is important to run anything. You know, the bottom line is that. You know, what your show did in terms of offering information to just talk about the issues that were going on in the corrections department and having to control the population of those who were imprisoned. You know, the different shows that you did on culture, the different businesses that started during the course of WLIB being a black talk station, black owned and operated, is in sharp contrast to what it is today. I'm not saying you can't do 3 or 4 hours of talk and fulfill whatever requirements that might be. And I don't even think it's not even about requirements, because that's the first problem. The government threw out the window any kind of requirement that it's fair game. You don't have to provide public affairs. You don't have to do news. There was a time that you knew you had a job because somebody had to read 5 minutes worth of news on a radio station. You could go a whole day on a station and not hear anything. I was in somebody's vehicle, and they happened to put on satellite radio, and you could just go for hours, and some of the people that you and I worked with or are on satellite right now, I'm amazed, you know, you hear them in other parts of the country, and you don't get any information unless you tune into a station that is providing information. Everything it's changed. But I also think that, you know, Kay, we had magic in a bottle, and it's not to say that, you know, no one else thought of it, but we were basically the template of what went on with successful progressive talk. There would not have been an Air America had there not been a successful, you know, Kay Thompson Payne show or Gary Bird program or the morning programs we used to do. You know, we got mayors elected. We also had an impact when Jesse Jackson was running for the presidency. I mean, you know, very little is said about that now because we have a Barack Obama and things have changed and people look at us like as if we're a bunch of old expletives. But the bottom line is that it had to start somewhere, you know? And and it's just one of those things. So, I mean, we're at a point now that we really should document what it is that we do. Because I don't know. I'm not saying I feel like I'm going to be leaving the planet anytime soon, but you just never know. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know what goes on with respect to how people view us anymore, but I do know that we had a brand, and I do know that there are other parts of the country. For instance, I have a cousin in Detroit, and she tells me that there are two black AM talk stations competing against each other. But, you know, Detroit has a myriad of problems. You know, you have the Flint situation, you got the governor, and Detroit itself is now trying to rebuild itself as a community in which to live in. It bothers me with all the talk now that New York City has gained. I don't know if you heard the news today that the population in Brooklyn is almost equal that of Chicago.
No kidding. Wow. No, I hadn't heard that.
That was on the news today. And I'm just saying, you know, I know living in New York,
which has the greater numbers? What are the numbers
I would assume that a concentration of those areas are where all the folks have moved in and gentrified, you know, like Bedford-Stuyvesant, Prospect Heights, Park Slope, all those areas there, you know, they've become, you know, it's like a mecca now for young people to go to. But at the same time, it still has its ills. But I never thought that, I mean, I know Chicago is a pretty sizable city, but I never thought that one county out of five would be larger than a whole city somewhere else, you know? You know, it's just amazing. And, you know, we need to prepare ourselves for that, you know? So, you know, and I really think that basically if we had the facility of at least beating the drum the way we used to back in the day, even the activism that used to go on. I mean, it's one thing for an Al Sharpton to rise to a lofty height to have his own show on a network television. But, you know, Sharpton came from somewhere. He started out somewhere. People don't want to remember all that.
In the church, he was a boy preacher.
Exactly. You know,
I remember seeing a video of him as a boy preacher.
Right. Okay. And I have to say that I remember there was a time when I was told by the ownership in the very beginning not to give him any airplay, but he became so enormous in terms of his activities that you couldn't ignore him. You know, and you know, every day we had a conversation. Every day he was on either your show. I would wake him up in the morning and, you know, get a comment and things like that. And a lot of people, you know, can turn around and take credit for his rise. But the bottom line is that even today when you stop and look at these movements, it's not the same the way, you know, I'm not saying that the other movements out there you know, Black Lives Matter and the other organizations that are participants in trying to correct the ills of the world, they have a different way of going about things now because of social media. But I just think that the demographics that we had, the numbers, will never be the same, you know, when you look at social media is a different. It's a different phenomenon. I mean, I could always go back, even to this program at some point. If I missed something that I said and I want to, you know, check, I could just go on the internet and find Kate Thompson Live, Google it, and play it back. You know, it's memorialized. But, you know, when we were on, everything was happening live, and you had, if there were six states listening, and if they were hot, I remember the back and forth with you and Bob Grant. You know, you would say something, those idiots would listen and respond to it. The minute you got off the air, his show started at 2 o'clock. You know, things like that. So I'm just saying, you know, those demographics, I mean, radio has changed to a certain extent that you know, that doesn't happen anymore, in my opinion. There's no other outlet. I mean, the TV stations, yes, to a certain extent, they'll, you know, talk about each other from time to time. But there was a sense of community that we don't have anymore in this town. Again, maybe I sound like Father Time. Maybe I'm wrong for thinking this. But it just seems to be way different than what it was then.
Whatever happened to Bob Grant? Because to me, he was amusing and he was very funny because he was an idiot. Okay, so whatever happened to him?
Oh, he died. Yeah.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, he passed away. And what I found so interesting, somebody in his family, the way he would talk about black folks, particularly David Dinkins as being the men's room attendant, you know, I'll never forget that. And I understand that somebody in his family is married to a black woman or a black man, you know, and that he kept that under wraps for the longest time, you know?
He was like the early Trump, huh?
Yeah. But he didn't have Trump's money. He just had 50,000 watts to and 4 hours to play with, you know?
Yeah.
And really? That's it. That little stinking piece of steel that we talked into, you know, can yield all sorts of results, you know, depending upon who's listening. So it's something, and that's one thing I always heard Hal Jackson talk about. May he rest in, you know, I mean, he was a tremendous teacher in terms of what you can do and what you could say back then and get your point across. And he really did, I mean, he did a plethora of different things, but, you know, largely Hal is known for being a music person as opposed to doing news. But, you know, he did sports, he did some news, you know, and all that. But, you know, we have a rich history that we don't talk about. And regrettably, the way it ended, I just think it's sad, you know. But that's just, you know, I mean, the deal is this: that was all we had in this town.
Jersey stations, like I think it was WNJR and maybe one other, you know, that was so new. And I was filling in for, I don't know who was on, you know, during
Bill Franklin.
Bill Franklin, right, it's a long time ago. And that was the Five Missing Boys. I remember that.
Right.
Remember that? The Five Missing Boys in Newark. I covered that case, sure. And remember the psychologist? What was his name? He came in town. Oh my God. Because,
you're jogging my memory now.
He was a psychic. Remember him?
Yeah.
What was his name?
Yeah.
Bob? Was it Bob somebody? Because
I'm trying to remember also.
Yeah,
we're not talking about Dr. Jeff Gardere, but before Jeff Gardere, it was someone else. Jeez Louise. It'll come back to me. I'm certain after we get off. But, you know, those were awesome days, you know. I mean, and I know you brought in someone who came very close to finding where those boys were.
The guy who was a psychic. I forget his name. Remember that? Because he called me on the air, and he said a few things, and no one knew anything about that, and I don't even remember what it was, but he read me on the air, and I was in shock, and that's when I started having him on. You know, so, and there was a big case involving a hospital at that time that he knew all about, and I can't think of his name, and he died. And we brought him in. He was excited. He was darn good. Brought him in, and he would actually read people, and it was so true what he was saying about them. And he really had. He was the first psychic guy I've ever talked to.
I know Lloyd Strayhorn was very good too.
Lloyd was good. because he's more of an astrologer.
Right.
More like an astrologer. No, Lloyd is fine. And I loved having him on. But this other guy, and I can't even think of his name. And I can see his face. Came in from Florida, I think it was. You know, and he called
me on
the air.
Right, I remember that,
about this man who had a problem at one of the hospitals. And as a result, the man that he was reading left the state. Because what this guy was saying was true. And what he said happened in this hospital in New Jersey, in Newark, was absolutely true. And he ended up leaving the state. And I can't think of his name. And maybe somebody will call in and say, yes, it was so-and-so, you know?
Right. Yeah, because, I mean, a lot of your stuff is still archived, I'm certain of that, you know.
Yeah.
But I remember that period because you had him on several times. He would just call in from Florida.
Yeah, sure, and I would have him on, you know, like once a week, I think. And people would call because they needed to hear that. And it was amazing about his ability to read people. You know, and I had never talked to anybody like that in my life. And it was absolutely fascinating. I wish I could remember his name.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is that was then, and I guess we have to look at things, you know, the way they are now, but it's certainly not the end.
Julie.
I mean,
listen, Wayne, let's talk about Giuliani for a minute.
I don't even want to mention that man's name, you know. Every time I see him standing next to Trump, I kind of wonder what goes on between the two of them in private moments, you know? I really don't know. And Trump. Yeah, I saw the two of them standing next to each other. It's like, you know, he was the one that was trying to interpret what Trump meant after he said those scurrilous things about the NRA and Hillary Clinton. He has an explanation. We weren't trying to incite violence. No, you know. But Giuliani's history is so rich. You know, I mean, he promotes himself as America's mayor. Here's a guy who was married to his cousin. I will never forget the day that he announced his first wife was his cousin. And I'll stand accused here because I have some relatives that I wouldn't mind being married to either, but, you know, I'm not about to do that, you know. But the deal is, yes, I said it. But well, I'm not going to call any names, but and it's not what most people are thinking either, you know. But the deal is,
Is Gary
still
alive?
I don't really see Gary. The last time I saw him was at Vaughn's funeral. He spoke at Vaughn Harper's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Put on a little weight, you know. He basically the same. And, you know, Gary's Gary. I wish you had a chance to attend that. I know you were out of the country at the time. But,
it was quite
an event.
He was a good thing. I was in touch with him. You know, we talked every now and then.
I just got a thank you note from his wife today, you know, so I want to try to keep, because I know now that everything has died down, I could only imagine what she must be going through, you know. But that's that. That's life, I guess.
Yeah.
So
let's just review some of these other cases that we covered. You know, of course, it was the Tawana Brawley thing. That was a bidding. You know, that was just strange, you know, this kind of strange thing. But, and there's still so much to be told about that. One of these days I'm going to write about a book about that case because, you know, we know things that no one else knows.
Well, that's
you know?
True. The only thing is that I think what happened is it was very difficult to even talk about it now because people went to great lengths to defend her, and at the end of the day, the system was, you know, set up in such a way that she didn't even have a chance to breathe or defend herself. I mean, she's still wanted in the state of New York. You know, she can't come back to New York without being, arrested or something like that.
Why?
One of her, she never showed up for a trial, and that's how Alton Maddox lost his license to practice and all that, because she was being instructed by him, and Alton would be a good person to get on the air, you know, from time to time to talk to about what happened in that case, because I happen to know one of her aunts, and I talked to her from time to time, but you know, I really don't. I know that she became a nurse. That much I do know, but she has not been back to the state of New York since the time she had a subpoena, you know, out for her arrest and all that. So it's just one of those things.
That was awful. What was done to her? That was absolutely awful. What was done to that child?
I'll tell you that right now.
So, and
anyone who feels that it was a hoax.
But the time of Bill Noble, unlike it is. You know, with his introduction to the black community of black history, of African history, with all the things that he brought to it, what a loss. You know, and he lived here in Montclair, from Montclair, and also Gus, of course, Gus Henneberg with Positively Black. That was very political. And also, he was really telling it like it is. So he and Gil were, you know, on the same, let's say,
wavelength. Yeah, they covered basically the same issues.
Yeah.
I mean, and that to me is important, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know of anyone who does that anymore. I mean, I see shows on TV, but, again, they're not really required. So if there is a station that would do it, it's only out of demand and protest. Because even the young lady that's replaced Gil Noble, the direction of her show has changed compared to what he used to do. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that.
There's no comparison at all. You know, you can't even think in terms of that.
Right,
She's a nice lady.
Yeah.
However, Gil and Gus, they were dealing with, you know, black issues. Remember when Gil wrote, he talked about the drugs. You know, black is the color of my TV, too. Remember that?
Right.
And I had it, and I don't know what I did with it. I think I loaned it to somebody. But black is the color of my TV, too. And he went into, you know, people who were, you know, dealing in drugs. Remember, the drugs were really, really rampant in New York then, and people were shooting up in the streets and whatnot. And so he did that on that. And that was powerful, boy, I'm telling you. And at the same time, Gus was dealing with it from a political standpoint. He was talking about things that were wrong with the black community and how to straighten it out, but from a heavier standpoint. You know, he was not dealing with, you know, the acts of violence, so much so as what to do about it, and, you know, getting people together to demonstrate and to, you know, take a stand. And both of them were a lot more in depth, you know. And
both had different messages, but their messages were they were important messages. That's the way I see it, you know. There's no question that Gil's approach to what he did. I mean, he was able to last a long time on ABC because he managed to galvanize his audience to become more active and things like that. I know I had a chance to talk to Gus before he passed, and you know he got the note one day from NBC that, you know, he wasn't needed, and instead of protesting, he decided his protest was to walk away from it, you know. And it's just sad that we're given these opportunities, and I'm not saying what he did was wrong, because his thing was
talking about
I'm talking about like it is, and Gus's program with Reverend Eugene Callender. You know, I remember distinctly him telling me that once they decided to put it on at an ungodly hour, which was, to me, insulting, I don't blame him for taking the stand that he did, you know, because it was almost like as if his program was an afterthought, and it happened at a time when public affairs was required still by all these networks, you know. He had an audience, you know, but the deal is that unlike Gil Noble, it's not to mock his memory or anything like that. Gil had one direction. Gus was multifaceted. You know, I'll never forget the first time I went into his office and I had one of my siblings with me. Thanks to you, Kay, you may have forgotten about this. But some years ago, I had come to visit. I had asked you, my sister. that one. That one. Yeah. And we spent an hour, and I realized that Gus was more than just a TV personality, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't know him as well, obviously, as well as you did.
Listen. New Jersey Performing Arts Center would not have been built without Gus Henningberg.
Right.
Okay? He represented the construction workers, the black construction workers in the state of New Jersey. Okay?
Right.
Because they weren't getting any construction work. He walked out on the tarmac at Newark Airport. That's how he started in this. And when he walked out, the plane stopped flying. And then he was invited by, I don't know, the Attorney General, I think at the time, to meet with the Attorney General in Trenton. And that's how
right.
that whole thing started, because he said that black construction workers and businesses were not getting business because they were black. So he represented them. And then when Larry Goldman came into town and they were building New Jersey Performing Arts Center. And Gus demanded that they have black construction workers work on that building. And so that's how New Jersey Performing Arts Center came to be in Newark, New Jersey, through the efforts of, you know, my partner, Gus Henningberg. Okay?
Right.
And the construction workers were all behind him. And, of course, you know, he had a good reputation with the other construction people, the white construction group, you know, in the state of New Jersey. And that's how that happened. And he has had a good reputation of being a worker in the civil rights movement. So did Gil. You know, but Gil was not working in construction. He was a television person.
That's my point. Right. Gus didn't need that job. And the thing is, I think from the time Gus left, that show has been in obscurity. I know that Pat Battle, dear friend and former colleague, you know, she does it, but it's not the same way that Gus and Eugene Callender handled that show.
Positive Black doesn't even exist anymore. You know, period. No,
I thought she did a 15-minute segment on that. I'm not sure.
No.
It's some ungodly hour in the morning.
Yeah,
every once in a while,
I forget the other lady's name who was did a little, I think a 10-minute segment or something. But it's there's no comparison.
Oh, so it's gone. Okay,
no,
all right. The sad part about it is that. That's why many of us still are in a vacuum, because we don't know. Not everyone is aware of what's going on out here. And, you know, it's sad that it's like that, but I can't help but feel it's by design, you know. I firmly believe it's by design. And if we're ever in a position, some of us have the money to go out and buy another WLIB or start another WLIB. I just think that, you know, the programming of the template is there, It's just a question. I can't understand why Oprah Winfrey wouldn't even do that, not just on the national level, but what she's doing on satellite could be carried by a local station. Not everybody can afford to purchase satellite, you know. I, for one, you know, and I mean, it's not to say that I suppose if I were to budget myself for that, I would get it and I would listen. But, I mean, the deal is there's so many stations in the New York area that need that kind of programming. But if there's a presumption that you're going to go out, Kay, and spend the money to hear what it is that you want to hear, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wrong.
Yeah. I don't know, Wayne, but, you know, black radio is still on. And it's not like it used to be because we were, you know, bringing such – you know, crucial cases.
Right.
If we went down a whole list of, you know, cases that we dealt with, you know, it was really just absolutely, I don't know, it was crazy. But it was necessary. And Bob Ross, another one, he was so necessary, still is, you know.
Right.
And, but times have changed, haven't they?
Yeah. And that's another, because I grew up in that era when WWRL and WNJR and WLIB were very, and this is pre-BLS days, and I was a kid, teenager, but those were the places you tuned into to hear what was going on in your own community, you know?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The jocks were very entertaining compared to how...
I remember a name because Muhammad Ali had come into Newark. And there was a woman who had a, who was talking on the radio. Her name was Bernice Bass, we knew her. And she was doing WNJR, I think.
Okay.
And she was broadcasting it from a beauty salon, downtown Newark, as a matter of fact, from a beauty salon.
Wow.
In the corner, because I had gone down there one time with Gus. And I'm laughing because of the fact that this was the days when, you know, hair care was just coming into being, and wigs were all, you know, and black hair products were coming along, you know, gathering some, you know, momentum. And Chuck, the story goes, the truck drove up, and the small truck, I guess, with all the hair, and the door fell open or something, and all this hair was rolling down the street. And that's when Muhammad Ali was due to be on our show. So, when Gus was telling me that, it was the funniest story, but that happened downtown. I'm sure some people will remember that. I don't think I was born at that time. No. But anyway,
well,
that was one of the funny stories of New York. So,
I was on Amtrak the other day, and I was sitting next to a lady, and I had no idea how long, you know, these weaves that these young ladies get from the, I guess, beauty supply houses and things like that. I was so amazed at how expensive and how long it takes.
Listen, I'm going to say, don't even worry about it. I'm going to get that.
Kay, the day you put one on, I want to be there to film it. I don't get that. I mean, I'm sorry. I have appreciation for natural. I don't think you need it, Kay. You know.
Yeah, but just thinking, when you wash your hands, you don't feel like, you know, you don't feel like setting it or, you know, combing it or whatnot. You know, you just put a little wig on. Hey, it's a style.
Yeah. But let me ask you, in the hot weather, does that, you know, is there a peculiar fragrance that emanates from one skull?
Don't be silly. I think you have to wash your wig the same way you wash your hair. You can wear one. They have them for men.
Yeah, I guess I need to. Yeah. I'm getting tired of this gray, and I refuse to put that shoe polish in my hair. So.
Can you spell hair color?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But I was shocked.
When
this lady told me she took 4 hours to do that. And I said, oh, boy, I got better things to do at my time.
Are we coming to the time that we are going off the air or what?
Yeah, I guess we are. I don't know. I'm not even looking at the clock. What happened to Eric and Lisa tonight?
They are around here somewhere, you know. No,
okay.
I decided to do it alone, you know, because I was a little bit annoyed about a few things here. And just looking at the amount of people who have, you know, the Black Lives Matter. And, you know, when you hear things about the police and Trump and he's preaching this, you know, killings or, you know, this is what he is really doing. He's preaching death. You know, and I just got so angry.
Right,
you know,
he is so angry
about it. I just wanted to talk about, you know, me on the air. So that's what was happening. The rappers,
well,
about things going on. You know, there's no doubt about it. I'm so glad that they exist, and I'm very glad that Black Lives Matter, those young activists exist, because they were so sorely needed, and we are still, you know, fighting that battle, and it's unfortunate. But it's getting better. It's getting better slowly, but too slow. That's the whole thing.
That's the
okay?
problem. It is too slow. Yeah. You know.
Wayne,
but
good talking
Kay,
to you.
Enjoy talking to you, too. Very educational, yeah. I'll say, this week. But it's good to go back into time, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
And everybody join us again for Kay Thompson Live with Eric Payne, with Wayne Gilman, with Lisa Payne, a few other people. And we will be talking to you again next week, 8 to 9 o'clock.
All the best, Kay.
You too, Wayne. Thank you.